previously.tv podcast network.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 120 for the week of June 20, 2016. I am Tomato Limb David T. Cole, and I'm here with snoring bunkmate Sarah D. Bunting, celebrity chef Joe Reed.
So no knives then?
Cookie farter Tara Ariano. And gangsta with an A, Monty Ashley.
Does this look infected?
All right, everybody, we'll get to the episode quick, but I got a whole bunch of site business to get through, but I'm going to get through it quick. New t-shirt on glarkware.com for fans of the podcast. It's the Space t-shirt,
space!
Now available from glarkware.com. Pick up yours today and support this very podcast. You can buy an ad on this podcast to also support us. Go to previously.tv/ads to find out more. Also, a call for submissions. If you have a canon argument you'd like to make, if you have a game time you'd like to send us, or if you have a crackpot theory, please send it to us at ehg@previously.tv. And one more thing of interest, because I think it dovetails nicely with a lot of stuff we do on the show. On previously.tv, we have a segment called King of Disparate TV Things Mountain, where it's an ongoing battle between the champion and a new challenger every day, and it's just little small bits of TV, things like the font from the Dukes of Hazzard credit sequence versus, you know, the way Kramer walks into a doorway, that kind of stuff. So if you'd like to make a case for your favorite or least favorite TV moment, go to previously.tv and submit your King of the Mountains today. All right, on with the show. Joe, take it away.
Yeah, so we're here to talk about the fourth season of Orange is the New Black, which premiered on Netflix on Friday. 13 episodes of considerable length, I will say. We can take our time to bitch about the creeping length of streaming episodes, which has gotten egregious. Not egregious, I don't think, is Orange is the New Black. I think if there's a Netflix show that sort of feels like mine, this is the one for me, I think, much more so than something like House of Cards. So we're in the fourth season now. I think it's really making good use of the fact that this is this very lived-in community of women in this medium security prison in New York. Medium security, minimum security. I can never quite make that.
They called it minimum security at the end of the series.
They did, and I thought that was I had always assumed that it was.
Who is that voice?
Wait, what?
That was our guest, Monty, who is joining us on what we call the swarm on previously.tv of coverage of Orange is the New Black. Welcome, Monty.
Thank you.
Hi, Monty.
I'm a terrible host. I'm very sorry. You could just let me go on and just forever into infinity.
I was waiting for a pause, but then there wasn't one.
No, it just like give me a minute and I'll just keep on going. Yes, welcome, Monty. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I will just interject when I feel like it.
Yeah, you know what? Just like club me over the head and I'll stop. I promise. I guess what the entry point for discussion that I feel like maybe we should start is, because it does pick up right where it left off at the end of last season, which was such a sort of a beautiful moment of everybody sort of breaking through the fence and swimming in the lake. And then we immediately, and we got this at the very end of the season, we see the influx of new prisoners and like immediately the corporate for-profit nature of the prison really starts infringing upon everyone. And I thought that was for, you know, organizing principles, as organizing principles go, I thought that was a strong one for the season. What did everybody else think?
Well, I thought it was interesting that at the end of last season, we end with a big happy note. And I feel like the first few episodes of this season are basically a comedy, not to revisit the constant Emmy category debate, but it's a funny, fun show at first, and you have lots of entertaining people. And even the ones like Cucudio or Suzanne are, you know, or Lori Petty. They're, you know, they're funny, crazy. They're wacky. And then this whole season just keeps going down and down and down. And it ends in a much different place than it begins.
Ooh, so you and Joe are the only ones who have watched the whole season we established before we started this, our conversation.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
But we should put a spoiler warning out there that anything's game from episode 1 to episode 13. So if you're listening and you're worried about hearing something beyond what you've watched, throw your iPod in the river.
You probably need a new one anyway.
Bury it in the garden. Yes.
Without getting into specifics, then, do you think that this tone is a stronger one for the show to be in? Do you think it's better when it's dark, or do you like it better when it's a comedy, Monty?
I like that it is both things. I like that it's, in my opinion, the first three episodes are a comedy, and the last three episodes are a dark, dark, dramatic, tragic show. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting that they've got a setting that can do both. Get you a show that can do both, Tara.
That's an interesting note, because I watched one episode, the minimum required by law, and because I have never connected with this show. I think I've seen two episodes total, and I don't know why I don't connect with it. I know one, I think, was a canon presentation of the pilot, and because that was so Piper centric, I was like, nah, because she's not for some people. And I'm one of those people. This is the first one I'd watched in a while. I liked it much better. I might have to write a piece for previously.tv about how Lori Petty turned it around for me with herself after 51 minutes of screen time in this role. But I'm not sure. Like, I think part of my problem historically has been that I didn't feel that they were straddling the line. Sorry, phrasing, between comedy and drama effectively, or that it was like, I felt like it should take a darker tone, because sometimes the funny wasn't working and they were standing back a little bit from the punchlines. And I felt that way sometimes with this episode, but less so, that it was like, you know, tonally more appropriate and not trying so hard. For humor. So maybe what I needed was just to stick it out until it got kind of bleak.
Yeah, I feel like the darkness that sort of exists on the edge of even the comedic stuff, because as Monty mentions, like, they're very, you know, comedic characters like Suzanne and like Lolly, who is the Lori Petty character. And yet that comedy has such like a thick border of darkness around it, because these are people who have like legitimate mental illness. And I like this is a show that doesn't sort of sweep that under the side, while at the same time, it's not like, I never feel like the show is punishing me for having fun with the characters to the degree that I have fun with them when it comes time to sort of reflect on the darker sides of it. Like with Suzanne, I never feel like they're setting me up to feel like an asshole for sort of laughing at her antics. I think they do a good job of kind of integrating all of that into her character. And I think there's a lot of characters that they do pretty well with that. And I feel like they've done good stuff with Piper this season in terms of, I think they've realized how much the audience didn't care for her in the first couple of years. And then they're just like, all right, we're going to steer into that skid. And like, she's going to become like this white privileged asshole in this season. And they really deal with the fact that that episode where, I don't know if you guys have gotten to the point where she squeals on Ruiz and the other Latinas to the new prison guard. And she like really opens up a can of worms there that she is not prepared to deal with, both in like retaliation sense, but also in that like, oh, and now I've sort of cast my lot in with these people I don't want to cast my lot in with. And all of a sudden everything becomes like completely out of her hands.
Yeah, I love how Piper's concept of power is economic, you know, that somehow that's going to translate throughout time, her time in the prison. Yeah, I was kind of waiting for that to become undone. So I am not surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even in that first episode of the season, when she's sort of like strutting through the field and like nobody's paying attention to her because there's a hole in the fence and everybody's too busy having fun, where like even Chang just walks up to her and she's like, nobody cares, lady. Like, stop it.
Yeah. In the first couple seasons, I felt Piper was the worst. And I didn't like spending time with her. Now I feel like the show knows she's the worst.
Yes.
Like she gets herself into trouble. And now when horrible things happen to her because of her own actions, I do feel bad for her because she deserves some bad things, not this bad thing.
Right.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is very enticing for those of us who've only watched three.
No, the internet's a really big place. Do you think there's like a Piper fan club somewhere on the internet, or is that just like too crazy to even consider?
Well, here's what I wonder. How does Piper Kerman feel about the show at this point?
Yeah.
Consultant. I don't know how much consulting she's done. I've read her book. This stuff didn't happen in it.
Yeah. How soon did they like diverge from the book in the show, or is it immediately all new new stories rather?
She went to jail and met some people. And here are some of their names.
Okay, got it.
Pretty
fair
much.
Fair enough.
I mean, we all have done
that. Yeah, fair enough.
Hey, can I, piss on your love fest, which is this from,
yes.
for my take on this. This show is fine. I will watch it. I will watch it sort of like nibble here, nibble there. I don't inhale it anymore. For me, the show has become what Archer has become, which is just comfort TV. I feel like the beats I see are the same beats kind of coming over and over again. No, Archer is the poster child for that because it is so Scooby-Doo-y in its formula. But I'm seeing some of that in this show too, where I'm entertained by it, but I'm not enthralled by it. So while everybody else has sort of inhaled the season, like we're still on episode 3 and I'm like, yeah, I'll get to episode 4 at some point. Tara's gone for a week. I'll pick it up when she comes back, I guess. I'm in no hurry for it. And I feel like, and we'll get into this a little bit later in the show, but there's, for me, a relationship between the highness of a concept of the show and its lifespan. I mean, I'm not saying anything crazy and new to the internet, but this is, you know, a relatively high concept show, and I feel like maybe it's spinning its wheels a bit, and it's sort of going in some loops. Industrial prison complex industry stuff is interesting, but I feel like I'm starting to see the same things over and over, and it keeps me from wanting to marathon it, you know, like I used to.
Well, to that point, it's surprising to me that a show that has so much potential for like cast entries and exits, they don't take advantage of that as much as they could. It would be crazy if they were to write out Piper at this point. I say this not knowing whatever horrible thing is going to happen to her later. I assume it's not that she's murdered, but question mark. But it seems like as much as they keep bringing in new people, there isn't that sort of winnowing of the rest of the cast where it's like, have we maybe gotten the most that we can out of like Yoga Jones or the Nun or whoever? Like, it seems like there's way too many people for them to need to have to keep servicing their storylines for how much they get out of them.
There's this terrible thing that Microsoft and some other companies used to do a few years ago, and I have to find out the name for it unless somebody else knows. But basically, they would take the group, you know, whatever group it was, you know, the programming department or, you know, the marketing department for, you know, Skype. And regardless, you could have all A-plus players, but after they did the reviews, the last person was always fired. So if you had 10 people with 99 and one guy with 98%, you know, effectiveness, the 98% guy was turfed. And that's how like they had this, like, it was like this weird sort of like corporate eugenics program they had going on. And I feel like maybe they could do something like that for the cast, you know, just like, just not to punish people just because they're like a little less popular, but just like force themselves to churn a bit.
Well, they're having kind of the opposite problem where they have a big cast and a lot of the people on it are really good at acting. So they keep getting other jobs. So you end up having what you had on Oz, where important characters get shuffled off to solitary for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is less Laverne Cox than I think there would be if the Rocky Horror Picture Show weren't being done shortly.
She has a pilot, too. She made a pilot as well.
Can
Go
I ask
ahead,
a question about the nun, though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which one is she? Is she the little runty-looking one with the emo hair?
No, she's the red-haired older woman. You might not have even noticed her in the first episode because I don't know if she was in it very much.
Yeah. Because the runty one with the emo hair played a nun on SVU last season. It's like, that would be weird.
Oh,
kept.
No, it's not her.
Mid character? No, okay.
No. I know who you're talking about. But, you're talking about the one with the scar on her neck.
Gina. Yeah.
Speaking of people in other roles, I want to briefly praise a new character that we have on this season. He's a Piscatella.
Yeah, that asshole.
It's Brad William Henke, who's not actually that, the character isn't that bad a guy. He's not a great guy, but mostly he just wants to follow the rules.
Like Tara.
I don't know if I would agree with that, but go on.
Yeah, there's room for debate on that, certainly, especially in the last couple of episodes. He does cross the line, but for most of the time, for the first half of the season, you're watching him, you're thinking, I hate this guy, but maybe we do need some professionals in this place. He's Brad William Henke. You might remember him as Coover Bennett on Justified or the football player Christian Patrick on Sports Night.
He is not Pruitt Taylor Vince, the other three-name guy who's kind of a larger person but has a crazy eye from Identity. It's not him. It's a different guy.
I thought he was super fun.
I have an update. It's called Stack Ranking. And it's way better than it's so much more evilly corporate than I imagine. Stack ranking, also known as a vitality curve, or the more blunt rank and yank, classifies employees based on a 20-70-10 system. 20% of the workers are deemed cream of the crop, 70 receive adequate ratings, and the bottom 10 are characterized as underperformers who should be fired. So it's not even the last person. It's like the bottom 10. Basically, they're decimating their workforce every year. So, you know, something to consider.
Orange decimate. Well,
something to consider, workplaces of America.
Yikes.
Are you a monopoly that's controlling the world? Consider it.
Any other thoughts on this show and the fourth season?
The secret plot of the entire season is the Stanford Prison Experiment.
I mean, that's not entirely untrue. Yeah, that's
good guards and bad guards. But in the end, does it really matter which one you are?
Right.
Well, and the new guards are just so like their force of person, not even personality, just sort of their force of will is so large that, and they just don't give a fuck about anybody. And it's interesting. They keep Piscatella especially keeps mentioning that like at every chance, just like reminds them like you're a criminal, you forfeited, you know, your rights essentially. And every time Caputo's on there, he comes back because he's very much caught up in the corporateness of this season. And he comes back and he'll be the one to mention to mention the fact that like, oh, these are human beings that who deserve some sort of basic human consideration. And then he'll go away and the other guards are just like, nope. So it's kind of malevolent in that way. Yeah. I did want to also shout out Blair Brown as the celebrity Martha Stewart-esque, although a little bit more Paula Deen is put into her personality. I feel like she's Martha Stewart for the sentencing and then Paula Deen for a lot of the rest of it. I love her so much, especially from Fringe, obviously. So it's always nice to see her on TV, and she's kind of mischievously sort of coy about her, like, her wealth, the way she operates, and she sort of always has that smile of just like, well, of course, I would, you know, want to be friends with all of you, you know, black women, despite my history of racist puppet show videos or whatever that comes out about her. It's really, really a fun performance, and I like her a lot.
Last question.
Okay,
go ahead.
I have a last question too. Okay. Any chicken sightings between episode 4 and 13?
No chicken.
All right.
No.
Okay. Good to know.
Mine is without spoilers. Does something bad happen to Tacy in her new office job? Because that is my favorite development, maybe of the series to date.
I can't categorically say no.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you a kind of. I know. It's a great development. And she's so, Danielle Brooks is so funny in those scenes where she's like operating the phone and whatnot. It's really good.
I mean, she was one who, you know, her character actually did get paroled and then she committed some great little minor crime to get back into jail, as I recall. Yes. And that was one where, like, it, despite what I said earlier, I have no problem with Tasty coming back.
Of course. She's so much fun. Yeah. Exactly.
As a little tease, I don't know if it happens in the first three episodes, but there is a plot from Bob's Burgers that makes an unexpected appearance on this show.
I look forward to that.
Wow.
Awesome.
All right. So you can check out Orange is the New Black season four recaps on previously.tv. We're sort of rolling them out like what, one a day or something like that?
It's one or two a day. I think we have three a day for the next couple of days. And Monty will be covering episode 12 of this season.
All right.
Oh, best of luck.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be hilarious.
All right. This is a extra hot, great micro, a micro.
I have a question. Since we were just talking about tennis, who would be the best tennis partner from TV? And as chance would have it, and we just heard, we actually happen to have a panel this week that is especially qualified to answer this one. John, why don't you lead us off?
I'm going to stay in the shallow end and say Raylan Givens. Not only is Tim Oliphant a pretty respectable player in real life, check my Twitter feed for video that supports this if you don't believe me. Raylan would be just the person to have on your side, and then he would use his steely gaze to intimidate opponents into giving you all the close line calls. And with the cut of most tennis shorts, he'd likely distract the opponents into playing far from their best. Joe, what do you think?
All right, if you think I'm not going to pick Brienne of Tarth with her hulking Navratilovian frame and eagerness to pounce on all volleys before they can even threaten her tennis partner, to whom she has sworn an oath to protect, you're absolutely crazy. Sarah, I know you have someone in mind for this.
I certainly do have someone in mind, and I hope you will enjoy it when my plan comes together, because my pick is Mr. T. In the event that the T does not stand for tennis, one hopes that all the noisy fool pitying coming from the ad court will intimidate opponents of all shapes, sizes, and military affiliations.
I sure do have opinions, so my pick is Roger Azarian, West Beverly Hills High School tennis phenom, / aspiring screenwriter, / Twin Peaksy blonde objectifier, / possible patricidal maniac, as played by a young Matthew Perry. And I seem to recall from Friends days that Perry was actually a pretty serious junior tennis player before he got into acting, so let's assume he remembers enough about the game to be able to carry my ass, because he would need to. Dave!
I'm going to go with John Hamm's character from 30 Rock. He thinks he's great at tennis because he's too handsome to be told otherwise. Because here's the thing. It's a great opportunity to win a match of tennis, being a beginner myself.
Yep.
And all the time you get to look at that handsome, handsome face.
Yeah, you bastard. But I think the ultimate tennis partner is actually Megan Smith. She's Molly's favorite doubles partner on the tennis court and a birthday girl this week.
Happy birthday, Megan!
So I know what you're thinking. Dave, didn't we hear that before? Yes, indeed we did. I might have messed up the dates and played it a little bit early, so I wanted to play it for Megan very close to her birthday again. But as a bonus, since that was from a couple of weeks ago, we're going to ask Monty for an additional answer.
Oh.
I would go with Michonne from Walking Dead on the theory that mechanically swinging a katana is a lot like swinging a tennis racket, so she should have the right muscle memory. Also, you want to partner with No Mercy, who will kill your opponents.
Hey, this is Nick Reinwald Jones, host of Making the Sausage, a podcast about the inner workings of television. And this week I talked to Law & Order SVU producer Mark Dragan about the world of post-production.
New York is notoriously very...
Right, it's hard to capture clean audio.
Yeah. There's a lot of sounds
on the day.
Yeah. And so a lot of times we'll need to take out because really you got to hear the dialogue.
Yeah.
That's first and foremost, you got to be able to understand what somebody's saying. But then you struggle because it's very hard to recreate a performance. Some actors it was a very emotional scene and you just can't get back there. But you try and get it. So then you have choices on the dub stage where you can choose, okay, let's put in the loop line, or you go with production and you do the best you can.
Right.
But you're really trying to make that choice at that moment of what tells the best story.
To hear the rest of this episode and many other conversations about making your favorite TV shows, just head to previously.tv and click on podcasts or subscribe to Making the Sausage on iTunes.
All right, it is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
Hello. My pick is for The Girlfriend Experience, which just aired its two last episodes of the season last night as we record this. This is the show that's adapted from Steven Soderbergh's movie of a few years ago. This one starring Riley Keough, who I looked up the pronunciation of her name, so I hope that's right. She is not just a great actress in her own right. She was had a small supporting role in Magic Mike. She is also the daughter of Lisa Marie Presley. Looks it. Once you know that, it's impossible to not see. The Girlfriend Experience, the movie, is pretty bad. It stars an actual porn star as the protagonist. Sasha Gray is her name, I think. And this one benefits from having an actual actress in the role. And it's sort of a reimagining or an extension, or it was inspired by the movie more so than it is like picking up the actual same story. But what's been fascinating about it is that it's really gets into the nitty gritty of how you become a high-end escort. Like, Sarah, I'm not sure I would necessarily recommend it to you for process as a process nerd, but I loved watching that part of it. You know, they sort of get into like how the websites work and how you have to make sure the photos that you take like show enough of you to entice people to want to pay you like $10,000 to have sex, but not enough to show your actual face and stuff. Shit happens to her over the course of the season, and I thought that the finale would sort of delve into that more. But other than in the penultimate episode, she goes back to see her family for her parents' anniversary party after she's just had this big sort of scandalous thing happen in Chicago. And then the last episode is actually just like 15 minutes, which is half the length of an episode, about her having this encounter with one of her clients and like how weird it is, but how she's, you know, she's not scared, she's in control. It's like, without getting into the details of like sexy stuff, which is, it's not that kind of podcast. It's a really interesting, smart, unsettling, weird show. And as much as when I thought it was strange at first, I still think it's strange that Starz airs it at 8 p.m. because there's some explicit stuff happening, and for us, that's at like 2. So if there are kids in Hawaii who know how to work their parents' DVRs, they're seeing some shit at 2 in the afternoon on Sunday. But I like that it's only a half hour, because it gets into it. It doesn't dilly-dally in its storytelling, and since I have historically had a problem with stuff that drags on, I appreciate that this didn't. So if you missed it and you have Starz, all the episodes have been available all season, and I recommend it. It's like, for a sex show, it's not that pervy, and it's just really interesting and smart and weird. That is my take. And my plug is for a post that Sarah and I did last week, which we'll link in the show notes, which is giving Hillary Clinton, the presumptive Democratic nominee, some fashion inspiration from TV's Best Dressed Ladies. And I stand by everything we picked. And I congratulate me and Sarah for trying to help her get the makeover that she deserves.
Monty.
All right. As you know, RuPaul's Drag Race is not currently airing. You can tell because everybody's so sad. But what you may not know is that RuPaul has a secret side project on the Game Show Network called Skin Wars, which I'm not here to talk about. But regular Skin Wars is a straightforward reality show where people do body painting. So they, you know, paint a body so it looks like it's wearing a tuxedo, or so that when it's standing against a bookcase, it's invisible. And for some reason, it's hosted by Rebecca Romijn, and one of the regular judges is RuPaul, acting just like RuPaul, with a little less of the ridiculous gay puns, but still wearing silly hats, because apparently that's just a thing now. That season is about to end, and it's got a spinoff that I am going to talk about called Skin Wars Fresh Paint. And it's kind of Cupcake Wars crossed with the concept of RuPaul's Drag U. And I'm really excited to buy it because it's a new way to do the same reality show. So while Skin Wars is a season-long thing where you start with 13 dopes and you end up with one dope, On fresh paint, you've got people who have never done body painting before, but they're like a tattoo artist or a guy who paints cars with skulls on the hood, or a fine artist who is very snooty about how they paint in oils. And they're paired up with mentors who have been on Skin Wars, which theoretically makes them celebrities, but I have watched every episode of Skin Wars, and I remember two people, and not fondly. There's the guy with red hair who was good but a jerk, and this really annoying lady, and that's it. And the really annoying lady might have been five or six annoying ladies. It's hard to tell. But I really like the format of Fresh Paint, and not just because it's just RuPaul, who's apparently really into body painting now. So what they have is they bring in, let's see, I think it's like four contestants, and they're, no, I'm wrong. It's very complicated. You have eight contestants, and they're paired up. So you have four pairs. And each of those pairs gets a mentor. And then for the first round, the mentor looms over them and says things like, oh, you're doing that wrong. No, you don't want to do line work like that. No, do something else. And they get kind of annoyed. Then after that round, each of the mentors gets to pick which of their pair goes through to the next round. So they can be like, I really liked you, but you don't know how to do a nose, you're out. So you go to the next round, and then you have guest judges come in and decide which person goes through. And then you get the final round where the mentors don't get to loom over them. And the mentor who wasn't sent through gets to be one of the three judges for the final round. And it's all... Somebody put way more thought into this than they needed to, because you can just do the Cupcake Wars model of three rounds, knock somebody out each round. But for some reason, I find it really encouraging that somebody, and I'm going to guess it's RuPaul, because why else would RuPaul be doing this, is actually looking at competitive reality shows, even the lower tier ones, and saying, how can we do this a little bit better? And it's only aired one episode so far, but it was fairly entertaining. If you are entertained by people who have never done body painting before, trying to do photorealistic things,
I could do that at home.
Onto very, very patient models.
All right, Joe.
So I wanted to talk about Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, which has quickly become my kind of go-to. I guess we count her as late night. It's always strange to me that we consider sort of cable late night a thing, because it's such a different animal. But regardless, Samantha Bee is the sort of head and shoulders above everybody else who's in that game currently right now. And I'm including even John Oliver, who I love, but Trevor Noah and Conan and all the sort of network late night people. I think she's been doing the most exciting stuff and the most... She comes from a place of like pure fury these days, which I actually find so refreshing, because how could you not? She had an episode reacting to the Orlando thing that you could tell the whole beginning of it was, you know, obviously put together fairly quickly because it had happened just previously on the Sunday, but she was just like guns blazing and completely like not willing to even deal with the thoughts and prayersiness of it, and she was just really on the ball. And then in that same episode went and did a whole segment on the Libertarian nominating convention, which was as crazy as anything I've ever seen. It's sort of, and that was a much more like classic like Daily Show style segment. Mm-hmm. So that she can sort of like put those together. I feel like there's probably something to be said for being new to the game and being able to come at it with a fresh sense of outrage. Like, she was a correspondent on The Daily Show for so long, but I think if this were like Jon Stewart back on TV and doing this kind of thing, I don't think it would have the same impact, because I really feel like the longer you're in the game, probably the more jaded you're going to get. And I think she's coming at it with just like fresh new bile, and it is awesome. And it's like... Appointment TV in a way that none of her contemporaries are.
If you are starting a punk group, Fresh New Bile is now available.
That is available. Just, you know, thank me in the liner notes. That's all I ask for.
Yeah, I haven't really been watching it, even though I'm a watcher of late night shows, because I was never a huge fan of hers on The Daily Show, but it seems obvious that I need to start. And what you're describing makes it sound to me like, I just wonder if part of what's making her so fearless is that she's like, well, if this ends, I don't, you know, it might, and I have no control over that, so I might as well just burn as bright as I can while I can.
There is definitely a sense of just fuck it to the show, which is...
Yeah.
Really
great, that.
Which really makes it worth it. So, and as far as plugs, you can find me, as always, at decider.com. I am writing today about the film 25th Hour. Again, I'm encouraging you to watch a movie instead of read a book, because who doesn't love that? And also, I want to say, if you are in Brooklyn on June 30th at 9:30 p.m., in Williamsburg at Videology Bar and Cinema, I am running a movie spelling bee for anybody who wants to participate. Come and spell the more challenging names in the film world. There are a lot of Eastern European cinematographers, just so everybody is ready. It's a good time. We did one a few months ago, and it was sort of on a smaller scale, and it went off without any serious injury, so I thought I would expand it. So anybody who wants to come by, participate, or just watch, have a drink, enjoy yourself. It's a good time. So that's June 30th, 9:30 p.m. at Videology Bar and Cinema.
Fun.
Sarah D. Bunting.
So OJ Made in America wrapped up last, as we record this, over the weekend. So just this past Saturday night, they aired the last installment. They had dropped the last three episodes onto the Watch ESPN app. After the episode that aired last Tuesday, we did discuss the first episode on last week's Extra Hot Great. I won't repeat what I've said in pretty much every previously .tv piece that I've written about it, which is that it's great and that everything you've heard about it is true, but don't be put off by it. Like, you have to sort of sit with it and let it build with you. But what I actually wanted to say about it, the New York Times Magazine had a cover story, which I didn't read because it was like, how Netflix destroyed television. And it's like, well, you know, I think we already know how that happened. And it's been a while since that happened. And destroy seems a little intense. Like, I still own a TV. Everybody calm down.
Yeah.
But this actually did benefit from being broken up, I think. Like, this particular work, this long-form documentary series, I guess, would have benefited, I think, you know, as someone who was writing about it on a deadline, I didn't have this luxury. But if I were just a straight consumer of it, I think I would have rather just watched it as it was airing, because you need to catch your breath. It really is one of these, like, it's a great documentary, but it's like not enjoyable. It's like Dear Zachary, which people who have watched that will be like, that it's like, it's important and wonderful and horrible to sit through. And there are some difficult visuals and it's really thought provoking. And sometimes you do want to have like at least a night between installments so you can process what you thought of it. I love marathoning. I don't judge anyone for doing it that way, and I'm glad ESPN made it possible to do, but maybe something is lost in how we process TV if we don't stop to process TV. And there is some big time ugly shit here that we as a country could afford to take time to look at, and I am not talking about the photos. Speaking of ugly shit, here comes the plug. Intervention is back, and so am I, to make fun of hapless addicts whose parents misspelled their names. Ginger with a J. That's not okay. And speaking of plugs, Monty forgot to do that, so let's hear from Monty now.
Thank you. I would like to plug theincomparable.com, which is a podcast network that I do a surprising number of podcast appearances on. The game show podcast on The Incomparable will shortly have an episode of Trivial Pursuit, in which we play Trivial Pursuit. Spoiler, I never lose at Trivial Pursuit.
can we continue your plugs?
We also have a ridiculous project called Pod for Ham, where we are going one track at a time through the original cast album of Hamilton, and I am on about half of those. Oh, so if you saw the Tonys and you thought, oh, this song Yorktown sounds fun, I want to hear people talk about it for about 30 minutes. You can look up the episode I hosted of that.
Nice.
You going to say something, Tara?
Well, I was going to back up to OJ, but fine.
All right. Orphan Black announced that they're wrapping it up with season 5, and that's fine. Probably should have wrapped it up. Maybe season 3, season 4, which brings us to this issue, the finite series run. I hinted at it in Orange is the New Black discussion. Higher concept show, shorter run. I think this is a generally sound policy. There seems to be this weird point in a show's run like Orphan Black where it's picking up like internet steam and everybody's like, oh, if this is going to be a big hit, we should like, you know, keep it going, you know, extend it, maybe stretch it out. And then like all shows of this sort of, you know, limited, you know, it's a quality show, but it has limited appeal because, you know, generally you're going to get more traffic out of a normal drama than you will out of a sci-fi thing. Generally speaking, things like Lost, you know, being the exception, you know, inevitably is like, okay, it's, you know, it's doing good, but it's not like super great. So let's end it. 5 seasons for this show seems long. I think it dragged. I think they're, you know, I hinted at it in, you know, probably about a year ago, which is they fell into that trap where they beat the level 1 boss, and now their solution was just to have a bigger boss on top of that level 1 boss, and now they're going to go after that. And that's no way to build a TV show. You know, recognize an end game and work towards it and just pull the plug. Such a hard decision, I imagine, for the money people and for the dude who's, you know, ratings average, you know, his job or her job depends on it. And what do you guys think? Orphan Black, 5 seasons good, 5 seasons too long?
I mean, I feel like it's an understandable decision for in terms of pulling the plug from the network people, but I think also from the creatives, just to think about like these are, assuming they all like what they do, and that is, I guess, a leap, you know, not everybody loves what they do all the time. That's fine. But if you like enjoy putting this show on, I can see why you wouldn't want to be sort of eager to end it. And so I think that's why a lot of these shows that can go on for so long do, because both from a network perspective, but I think also the people who do it love doing it, there's not going to be that much of a impetus to send it to an ending. I think from a viewer perspective, endings are very good. I do wonder if, like, what are the shows then that we would be happy with sort of going on in perpetuity? And I guess it's stuff that just feels a lot less plotty, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, and procedurals, which are not terribly high concept, like someone's murdered, solve the case.
Yeah. Right. Sure. The more like, episodic.
Give it 20 seasons versus The Sopranos, which I think David Chase up top was like, nah, it's 13 hours. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it exploded. And I think it's really hard to say no to that kind of money and prestige and like being a network maker and all that stuff. And I think he did his best to control that and drive to an end. But by the time they started doing that, it had gotten huge. There's all these characters like that should have ended after 5, but it didn't. So
I guess the interesting case study for this is like The Walking Dead, because it is, you know, a I don't know what you would call that genre, whatever, you know, zombie survival genre. It's actually almost a genre to itself these days. And, you know, it is so open-ended and just sort of, you know, this long survivalist slog that it seems to just run under its own steam. And, you know, I wonder at what point that show becomes sort of like, for a lot of people, what I was talking about with Orange is the New Black and Archer, where it just becomes sort of like this comfort thing where they, you know, oh yeah, you know, I guess they're gonna have a few episodes where they, you know, have some physical challenge, and then they're gonna meet other humans, and the humans just want what they have, you know, and just repeat.
Or you just cut
beats
over to like Minnesota, where it's like Walking Dead, the new class, where right. everyone's living in the Mall of America.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the solution, of course, is Glark's New America, where I get to actually tell the people that make these shows exactly how long they have from start to finish, you know, kind of like Breaking Bad style, where you present me with your business plan and I will tell you how many seasons you get to make that mm-hmm. happen. Because, you know, like in the case of like Lost, and I think maybe season three of Orphan Black, you know, there is some stretching going on. And that is like the saddest thing about a show that was like hitting on all cylinders or firing on all cylinders. And, you know, then it doesn't. And that's why Glark's New America needs to exist.
I really think we're learning a lot about your top-down management style.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
With any luck, having an official final season will at least give Tatiana Maslany the Emmy she deserves, and then she can ride off into the sunset.
And we've talked before about the alias effect. When everybody knows the end date, you know, the show can kick into high gear again, can change, can become, you know, a frenetic, you know, dynamo. And hopefully that'll happen with Orphan Black. All right. So anyways, my plug very quickly is for a site that I run called Big Island Shoots. It's just my photography business, but I take photos and I like to show people those photos. I got lots of pictures of dogs. That seems to be the part of the business that's picking up around here. People love dogs. So if you want to see cute dogs and some ugly dogs, photos, check out.
Which is which?
As a matter of fact, I have seen cute.
I put frowny faces and happy faces on every photo. But Big Island Shoots for that. Thank you very much.
And...
All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Our guest, Monty, is submitting. Take it away, Monty.
I am submitting an episode from Bob's Burgers. I propose that Bob's Burgers is a great show, and one of the reasons that it is great is that the characters get themselves into trouble instead of waiting for a plot to happen to them. And another is its expert deployment of guest stars. And both of those things reach their peak in Season 3, Episode 16, Topsy. The only real external factor is that Louise has to participate in the science fair. But unlike her sister Tina, she's not a rules follower. And unlike her brother Gene, she's not naturally enthusiastic about doing stuff. So she decides to do the laziest thing possible, which her father Bob can only bring himself to object to for about 10 seconds because science fairs are dumb. There's zero pressure on her to do literally anything. When she goes to class, she runs into substitute teacher Mr. Dinkler, who's played by a guy named Mark Proksch. That's P-R-O-K-S-C-H. And I implore everybody to go to YouTube and look this guy up, because he used to have this great hobby where he would go on local TV news shows pretending to be a yo-yo expert. All of the clips are exactly the same, where they say, here's a yo-yo expert, and he stalls for as long as he can, and then he can't operate a yo-yo. It's amazing.
And, side note about that guy, he was also in Better Call Saul. He's the nerdy pill guy who outs himself to the cops in the season 2 premiere.
that guy.
He is not impressed with Louise's volcano, because who would be? If we can hear clip one, please.
Mr. Dinkler, you're new here, so please don't be offended if I disregard everything you say and turn in Mount Louisius here.
Wow, I bet stuff comes out of the top where this hole is, and it's just a real hoot.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oops. Why did I throw that down? I'm stepping on it?
No!
Why am I stepping on it? Over and over and over again. Uh-huh. You're doing Edison, kid. How about some science, huh?
I like that clip because there's not a lot of audio clips where people conveniently narrate what's happening on screen. So destroying the volcano technically makes him the villain of this episode, but it's not actually crazy for a science teacher to want a student to make some sort of token effort. That's not even an original volcano. She used the one from last year. Unfortunately for him, Louise does not take kindly to being thwarted, which is one of her core character traits, that and shouting. So when she's told to do a report on Edison, her first plan is to do the laziest, most plagiarized report possible. And that takes her to the school library, where in clip 2, we run into Mr. Ambrose, the librarian.
I need information on Thomas Edison, something no one would recognize if plagiarized.
Biographies under E.
Thanks.
That's my job, and I love it.
Topsy.
Hmm?
I didn't say anything. Topsy.
Are you saying top chef?
I think he said Topsy.
No, I didn't.
Yes, I did.
What's a Topsy?
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Look it up.
Like in a book?
Yeah, sure. Books are great.
No, use the internet. Books are stupid.
I thought books were smart.
No, they're stupid.
But you're a librarian.
Yes, oh, shh.
You have just heard the biggest example of reverse typecasting in history. Somebody decided to make Billy Eichner, a guy who probably shouts in his sleep, a librarian. He is constantly shushing people for talking half as loud as him, and I love everything about that character. Through his patented combination of shout whispering, Louise learns the shocking truth that Edison once electrocuted an elephant who was named Topsy. And that's when her plan changes from doing a half-assed science project to appease Dinkler to do an entire-ass project to stick it to Dinkler. She now has a quest for vengeance. But that's not enough, because there's another kid, a real bland kid, Jesse or something, who's also doing a project on Edison, and that kicks her into competition mode for no real reason. So now she doesn't want to just show up Dinkler. She wants to crush Jesse. So now she's going to do the best science project possible. She's going to take Dinkler down a peg, and she's going to destroy this other kid who didn't do anything and who likes Warhorse, by the way. That's weird for a kid that age. So the character with the most contempt for school has been organically positioned, so she's motivated to go to an insane amount of work for a school activity. And it just so happens that for Louise, an insane amount is exactly the right amount she's good at. She immediately recruits Gene and Tina, and they start putting their own spin on things. Gene decides that there should be a song between Edison and Topsy, and it should be a love duet, because why not? He's been trying to get out of the laser dog fart rut, which is a shame. And Tina starts strongly identifying with Topsy, because she is someone who strongly identifies with everything. She's pretty much defined by constantly feeling empathetic. So she has a dream sequence where she goes into the black and white YouTube video they watched in the library, and she becomes convinced that she needs to tell Topsy's story. By this point, all three kids have their own separate motivations for building up the science project to ridiculous heights, and they're all going in different directions. Bob and Linda aren't interfering because they're either lousy parents who don't care, or because they're great parents who understand that letting their kids be weirdos is more important than some stupid science fair. And also because they've become consumed in their own pun-based subplot involving practical ways to hold spices. It's not super important, but it's kind of fun, because one of the secret pillars this show rests on is just terrible, terrible puns. Mm-hmm. It's not in my notes, but I will briefly mention every business in the town Bob's Burgers is set has a stupid pun-based name, except for Bob's Burgers. And Bob's the guy who loves puns more than anything. I love that. So jumping forward a bit, at the fair, Louise gets cocky and gets sent to the principal's office while Teddy freaks out in the basement. But that's all just stalling, because at this point, the show is on rails and nothing is going to stop the musical reimaginactment from happening. Gene finds an excuse to recruit kids from the school band and the school choir to push things over the top. And at this point, I'll add a thing that I didn't mention up top, which is that another thing that makes this show great is the musical numbers. Bob's Burgers is a very musical show, which is a little surprising when you consider that H. John Benjamin, Dan Mintz, and Kristen Schaal are all kind of limited in their vocal ranges. And normally, the core cast does a great job. But to put the song Electric Love over the top, you need to bring in ringers. You can't let just anyone sing, they'll say, aw, Topsy, at my autopsy. You need Oscar winner Kevin Klein to harmonize with perfect human being Megan Mullally, who gets to combine her twin superpowers of talking in a silly voice with actual singing chops. May we hear clip 3, please?
All right, let's show these people that if it ain't man on elephant love, it ain't worth singing about.
Attention, everyone. We have a very special treat for you. It's a musical reimaginactment of the very uplifting story of Thomas Edison and Topsy the Elephant.
They say Thomas Edison, he's the man to get us into this century. And that man is me.
They'll say,
what's going on? Where's Louise? And why do Tina and Gene sound like Gale and Mr. Fish out here?
It's science, Bob. You're not supposed to understand it.
Okay.
The first part of the song That's all we get to hear of it, but I'm convinced there's like 10 minutes more that somebody has written and will eventually release on a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I love the song so far, but we've only got Gene, Tina, Mr. Fishoder, and Gale. What we need is Louise to really turbocharge things. This is just me stalling. That's enough stalling. Clip 4, please.
The curve of her trumpet.
Is that you, Louise?
Pivot!
I've been down here so long. What's it like up there? Are people still the same with their funny ways?
Pivot!
All right, the thing we're doing.
Throws the switch, which sets off the sparks of the special effects extravaganza, apparently killing Tina, although it doesn't, obviously. This is the climax of the show, and I think it's the high point of the series. A-plus guest stars singing an A-plus song that's totally insane, but has been set up in a totally organic way by the A-plus insanity of the core cast. As a shining example of what makes Bob's Burgers specials, I submit the episode Topsy for the canon.
I'll go first and quick. This is a great episode, and they use Gene just right in this episode. You know, I've had some historical problems with Gene, but this is an example of using Gene perfectly. Great song. My favorite Bob's Burgers song and episode is Lifting Up the Skirt of the Night from, I think, season one, where they introduced Marshmallow and the gang. But this is a really good close second. Really good show. I really love it when Bob and Linda kind of get into kind of a competitive fight, because they both just refuse to back down. And the spice, what is it, Spiceps? And
spice,
the
spice rack. Spices versus spice rack.
Yeah, that whole thing was a nice little aside. You know, it didn't take it took up the right amount of time too. Sometimes, you know, there's a temptation to give a B story like more time than it deserves, and that was just right. The other little note I have is the name of the science fair projects in the background during the science fair. You can barely read it, but. Global warming, is it hot in here or is it just Earth? Sulfur smells bad. Black holes, should we be worried? And how carbohydrates made my dad fat are the projects the students were doing. Joe, what did you think?
It's a really fantastic episode. Even among my like high standard for Bob's Burgers, it's really wonderful. It's always nice to see Louise get a worthy foe. I think sometimes you almost start to feel bad for the people that she's up against because she's so intense about everything. But this one was she had a good opponent in this one. I thought, Monty, you brought up two of the things that I sort of jotted down that I was gonna make special mention of. One of them, I think the boy's name is Jeremy.
Okay.
The other boy, but that quote about Warhorse where Louise just goes, "What's your favorite movie, Squeal Magnolias?" And he goes so quietly, he just goes, "Warhorse," which hits me in my I'd like to get down now place.
Yeah.
Yep.
Of just like very soft spoken kids. And also I love Warhorse too, so I feel you, Jeremy. And then Teddy saying, "Are people still the same with their funny ways?" is an top three Teddy line. Like, I can't imagine too many things that I like more. He's so funny. And that's exactly like my favorite flavor of Teddy is just like, where does he come up with that particular phrase? It's so good. And then the one thing that you didn't mention, but I wanted to mention was in Tina's dreams about Topsy when Topsy is just like, you should wear your hair up. It'll look good. Just give it a try. Yeah. And they have that very sort of mumbly argument that ends with Topsy just being like, oh, no, never mind. Just wear it down. It's like perfect. Perfect Tina. Perfect everything. I love the plots where all three kids are working toward the same end. And it's just wonderful and so funny and one of my very favorite Bob's Burgers episodes.
I will go next. I also wanted to mention the Tina moment that Joe just said. And the other thing about why I love this show and how specific it is with its characters is that this glimpse of Tina's subconscious is so Tina's subconscious. Like, it's not a generic subconscious of a fantasy about what you would say if you were talking to a historical elephant. Like, of course, that is what Tina specifically would imagine she would have to say to Topsy and what Topsy would say back to her. And also, the song is great. And what I think this show does really well with its music is it's easy enough probably to write a jokey song, but they're actually good songs. Like, the counterpoint of the chorus
is
really sophisticated and very pleasant to listen to and lovely. And I'm glad that Sarah's going last, because my prediction about this is like, is her irritation at Louise's shrieking going to be canceled out by the focus on New Jersey hero Thomas Edison? Sarah, let us know.
I actually love Louise's shrieking, but what I love most about this episode is like just the quickness of it, the throwaway bits, like that, you know, Louise is talking about what she's going to do, and Tina's like, so heroic. And then she starts screaming about how it's totally, you know, her vengeance on Mr. Dinkler. And the other two are like, there she is. Like, I should just like publish my list so that I can point mutely to it henceforth of all the sibling relationships that are written incorrectly on TV, or actually the list of the ones that I enjoy and think are like good and feel true are much shorter. And I do like, this is a comedy, but these feel like siblings who know each other. And it's not like, totally. It's not like at the service of the joke. So Monty's point is well taken, that this is like a character driven moment and not a, like some MacGuffin comes in to start all this off. But like, it's the little throwaway lines in this episode that get to me, that Gene's like, you know what else your project needs? And very quietly, Tina's like, science? That. And then we heard this in the clip. You could barely hear it. But if you go back to the last clip, that Louise is like, and then there's a very tiny, quick, from Bob. That I just listened to it like 15 times. It was so funny just the way it was done that he's like, oh, God, here we go. And the exhibits in the background, like, it's just so complete. And the little moments sing, as it were, even, you know, as much as the big moments do. And then the big moments, like, they don't try to make it too big. Like, the exchange with that he's like, well, actually, you can't sing. And then he starts singing. And he's like, oh, my God, I can't sing either. Then that whole thing, which a lot of other shows sort of dragged out to this, like, comedic irony thing, and it would have gone on for 5 or 10 minutes, that was dispensed with in like 12 seconds. So yeah, very fast, very funny. I laughed the whole time. The librarian killed me. Just like the JFK-ishness, that whole bit was amazing, and yet he's totally screaming. And yeah, it was great.
Just reminded me, if you want another quality animated cartoon episode with Thomas Edison featured in it, check out Clone High's student film episode, where Edison is a real dick of a projectionist at the school. Also very funny. All right, it is time to put this to a vote. Joe Reed.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
Tara Ariano.
Yes, and I also want to shout out the moment where Mr. Fish Odor is backstage with Gail and is like, should we make out? And then he's like, oh, I'm okay.
And I will twice also vote yes, which makes it 4-4-4. That means Bob's Burgers Season 3, Episode 16, Topsy, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has the winner.
Well, Younger joins the group of shows renewed for seasons past, seasons that have not actually aired yet. Season 3 of Younger is coming in September, but this past week it was already renewed for a 4th season, which I assume shows are doing this so that they can lock people down so they don't go take other projects. But regardless, Younger is a very fun, light, silly show on TV land, and I'm glad it's coming back. Yay, Younger.
Loser of the week.
HBO Now, during a very much anticipated Game of Thrones episode as we record this last night that basically spoiled the climactic showdown in the title. HBO Now crapped out. So yeah, it was truly a battle of the bastards, and one of the bastards was HBO Now and or Time Warner Cable.
HBO Now is run by Major League Baseball. Did you know that? They use their streaming powers. So thanks, baseball.
Yeah.
Speaking about baseball, guys, brings up an interesting question, and that is this. Do you know what time it is?
Time for baseball?
Uh-oh.
It's time for the 7th inning stretch game time. Yeah, I'm not happy with that transition either, just so everybody knows.
We weren't helping yet.
To make up for it, I have a very quick, I am not a crackpot. I am not a crackpot. Going back to our Orphan Black discussion, why is genre show an actual name of a genre now? People say genre show as a genre to talk about shows like, you know, sword and sorcery and sci-fi. They love them together and call them genre shows.
What they mean is shows that might be a Comic-Con, which at this point could be fucking anything.
I'm just saying, stop it. It's.
I agree. It's
well, there's the normal shows, which are lawyers and cops and doctors, and then genre. It's like, for some reason, my supermarket still has an ethnic food aisle.
Yeah.
It has Italian food in it.
What a perfect analogy. That is exactly right. Yeah.
Foods from the Orient.
And then people don't understand that, like, genre comes with an actual meaning, and they start using it in the same way outside of a TV discussion, and you're like, what is going on? Are you this dumb? Anyways, I am not a crackpot. All right, this is the 4th game time of the season. The current standings are value guess 0, Sarah 0, Tara 1, Joe 2. Today, we are playing Everyone's a Critic from Corey Hinderstein, who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. All right, we played a game like this before, but here is the rules. In this game, contestants must identify the show by the excerpt from an online user review.
Oh, yeah.
These are drawn from both streaming and DVD set reviews and can be from any season of a show. We have 2 rounds. Round 1 is for shows generally considered good. These must be identified with an excerpt from a negative review for 2 points. Ask for a hint and you'll get a piece of a positive review, after which a correct answer is worth 1 point. So there's 2 possible reviews that you can use here. All right, then we'll move on to round 2, which comprises bad shows, which must be identified by positive reviews of those bad shows.
Very clever.
And the hint will be from a negative review. And he also has provided a tiebreaker, which is hot potato style.
Oh,
so
boy.
If there's a tie, look forward to that. All right, so let's get on with it. First, we'll let Picky decide who is going to start.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, that means we're going to go Monty, Sarah, Tara, Joe, are we ready to play Everyone's a Critic?
Yes.
All right. For Monty. This show has jumped the shark. It's obvious the writers have no direction for the show now, and they are just making it up as they go along. This season is a cross between The Young and the Restless, Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, and insert bad blank movie here. Blank is redacted.
Okay. I'm going to ask for a hint.
Okay, so your second clue is You can always tell people that have never really watched this program since they always think it is about zombies. You can try to explain to them all day long that this is one of the best dramas that television has ever produced that just happens to have zombies in it. And they would just look at you like you had lost your mind.
I'm going to guess that this person is talking about The Walking Dead.
You would be correct for 1 point, and Sarah is our scorekeeper this week. And
what the hell does
Sarah,
Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman have to do with anything?
Oh, it's you know.
There's woods.
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Sarah D. Bunting. His lordship spewed blood over Mr. Chamberlain, who was over for dinner when his lordship ulcer broke. Yes, that Chamberlain. Maybe this was a look forward to Munich and peace in our time. So the plot is both boring and absurd.
I'm going to guess and try to get the 2 points. So that was Downton.
You are correct.
Correct.
Yes. All right. For Tara.
Yep.
The popularity of this show is hard to believe. This isn't merely bad. It is awful. The acting and dialogue are terrible. I think this is basically a pacifier for the Breaking Bad babies to suck on, or off, as the case may be.
I'm going to also guess and try and go for the 2 points and say this is Better Call Saul.
You are correct.
Yay.
All right, Joe Reed.
Yes.
Used to be good. Notice all show scripts revolve around Dem propaganda, abortion, atheist, white hate. Protagonist face is wow. Bitter, twisted, mean, just like the script.
Oh, the liberal show in and on television, huh?
The one
it used to be good.
Wait, can I hear the whole thing again?
Used to be good. Notice all show scripts revolve around Dem, capital D, propaganda, abortion, atheist, white hate. Protagonist face is bitter, twisted, mean, just like script.
Protagonist's face is bitter, twisted, mean. I'm gonna need the other review.
Right, your positive review is: the creators of the show seem to have gotten the message and went back to what made this show great. Interesting cases, always with very unexpected twists and turns, and a lot of objection, Your Honor, and a mysterious, fascinating investigator to make it more colorful.
Is this Law and Order?
Is anybody
investigator? Is that The Good Wife?
It's The Good Wife. Yeah, correct.
Oh, investigator.
Yeah,
I was focused on Sam Waterston's twisted, cool, mean face or whatever.
I thought from the negative review, I thought it was House of Cards.
I thought House of Cards too, and
All right. All I know is I want a show with lots of objections.
Yes.
All right. So back to Monty for his second question. What used to be an interesting, fresh, guilty pleasure political drama has become a boring, repetitive, impossible grind. Grind. Get it?
So I guess I have to ask myself, do I trust this commenter to actually be making a joke or just think they've made a joke?
Therein lies the rub.
I'm going to roll the dice. Is it Scandal?
It is Scandal.
Nice.
All right, to Sarah. Just out of curiosity, if the showrunner, redacted, directed a show called Joe the Pure Black Man, would African-Americans consider the title racist? It seems that American women are mute when it comes to sexism. Next time you hear about an earthquake in L.A., think about all the suffragettes rolling in their graves.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I those words in that order are not helpful for me, so I'm going to need a hint.
Okay. Positive review time. I will admit that this show definitely has me craving the next episode. I am in love with this series, and it oozes every bit of your classic telenovela, but with more twists and surprises that you will not see coming. If you enjoy drama, romance, and crazy twists, this is the television series for you.
Okay. I have no idea. Benson! Why not?
Wow! It is Jane the Virgin. Hence that weird first comment, Joe the pure black man. Uh-huh. All right, Tara Ariano. This show is terribly written. Sorry. This show is so terribly written that I use it as a litmus test when I meet new people. Ended a date pretty early when an actual chemist said that he loved it. Literally, I have never met anyone who actually did science that didn't find the characterizations pedantic and hollow. It actually may be worse than Portlandia.
Sharp turn at the end there.
Actually does chemistry makes me think it's Breaking Bad. So I'm going to say Breaking Bad.
Nope. It's the positive view is it's still funny as hell. The focus is now more on relationships than four lovable misfit nerds and their misadventures.
Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory. Remember when Big Bang Theory used to be about science, everybody?
Yeah. No.
All right, to Joe.
Yes.
The writers lack the ability to create a realistic plot twist, and their attempts to mimic one only succeed in disgusting the viewer. Rape and death can only carry a story so far, and it dropped my attention far short of the finish line.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Game of Thrones. 2 points. Okay, for Monty. The storyline is predictable and very weak, spelled W-E-E-K. The sex scene is vivid and unnecessary. I got tired of the lead character playing so many different characters. If there was a negative star, I would have used it for this review.
Orphan Black?
Orphan Black is correct. All right, to Sarah D. Bunting. This show sucks. It's boring. The characters talk, think, and act like nobody I've ever met. They took in an underdeveloped kind of mysterious peripheral character from Iron Man who was great as that and made a whole show out of it.
Out of it?
Monty is like writhing around right now. I need a hint.
All right.
Sarah.
The positive show, review. A show that began its life as a Marvel-themed procedural, complete with a case of the week formula and its own set of
archetypal
characters. This show has evolved into one of the most compelling superhero-based shows around.
Still doesn't really help me, but I will guess Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Correct. All right,
I would describe Tara it as Ariano. Superhero-based even now.
Yes.
Unlike the original, this show is more contrived, slower moving, and terribly preachy. The two detectives are a little too perfect for my tastes, and I find myself irritated when they tell absolutely everyone how to live, how to act at a crime scene, how to choose their friends, how to raise their children, etc., etc., and that's just the first four episodes.
This has got to be Law & Order Special Victims Unit.
You are correct. All right, for Joe Reed, ending round one and bring us into our first score break. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is not round. First score break, still in round one. My apologies. Joe Reed, embarrassing. These six episodes are a caricature of the show's former success and a cheap knockoff of that. The mythology is retconned, the characters are dronish, and the standalone episodes are either dull or almost obscenely stupid.
The fact that these are critically acclaimed shows rules out the one I want to guess.
Well, it was mostly positive. Your mileage may vary, you know.
Yeah, I still think that's not the one I'm thinking of. I'll hear the other one.
The positive review is, what always set them apart was their humor. Episode 3, which is about a lizard who is turned into a man, returns them to full comedy thrust. This episode has nothing to do with aliens, and that makes it one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah. X-Files.
X-Files for 1 point.
Thinking Heroes. But...
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so it is time for our first score break. We are still in round one.
Team Venti, that's me and Joe, have 3 points each. Tara has 4, and value guest Monty has 5.
All right. So, back to Monty, still with positive shows with negative reviews. Of all the lame shows on TV today, this one is the lamest by a long shot. It's boring, extremely cliched, and utterly pathetic. This show gives a tri-perspective, T-R-I, of three families. One is gay, the second is interracial, and the last is straight and white. Consequently, they're all pathetic and cliched.
Straight white.
Is this Modern Family?
It is indeed.
Oh my goodness.
Sarah Bunting. Good yes. humor is rooted in reality. However, rather than being a Dilbert type where there is reality, this show, redacted, just goes off the deep end of stupid. The boss would have been fired years ago. The supporting characters are weak and apathetic.
Not just pathetic, apathetic.
And I may add, this reviewer spelled weak correctly.
Oh,
I say.
Wonderful. I hope I will honor his or her work by correctly guessing The Office.
You are correct. Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Season one was about transgender identity, transitioning, family acceptance, and season two is completely different and all about sensuality and selfishness. It sort of feels like there's no plot anymore. Just sex scene after sex scene and many references to Judaism.
It would be really bad if I couldn't get this one. It's Transparent.
You are correct for 2 points. All right, Mr. Reed.
Yes.
Expected more action like The Goodfellas, and also I'm not a fan of adultery.
Wait, that's it?
That's it.
Does it say The Goodfellas?
The Goodfellas.
Love it.
Yeah.
Expected. I'm guessing this has got to be The Sopranos.
You are correct. It was The Sopranos. All right, number 17.
It's pretty cool.
For Monty, psychotic agent that doesn't follow orders is committing adultery, repeatedly, and sleeping, seducing teenage boys just to get what she wants out of him. I don't think I like the message. And most definitely hope the CIA has a much better culture than the one portrayed for entertainment purposes. Let me read that first sentence for you again.
Okay.
Psychotic agent that doesn't follow orders is committing adultery repeatedly and sleeping, seducing teenage boys just to get what she wants out of him. You know, we all bring different things to our TV viewing. What do you think, Monty?
I have a guess, but I don't trust it.
You want the positive?
I do want the positive.
Sophisticated, intelligent, complex, and rewarding. I had hoped a lot from this intriguing and contemporary spin on the Manchurian Candidate theme, but the show served up that and so much more.
All right. Is it Alias?
It is not. Sarah D. Bunting?
Homeland.
Yeah,
Homeland. Oh, that show. I've heard of it.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting.
What boy was she having sex with on that show? I don't remember
the,
that.
The season before last.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
When she was in... Where were they?
Where were they, Sarah?
It was like a...
They were Pakistan, right?
Who cares? Yes.
All right. Sarah.
Read the particles, Tara.
I do. I just don't remember. It was 2 seasons ago.
I don't either, and I wrote them.
Yes, it's me.
No,
it's Sarah.
It's me.
No, it's,
pay attention,
it's
Sarah.
Sorry, I'm not scorekeeping.
Deplorable characters, just a sad state of affairs to think that people who behave like this are considered funny. Basically, this is a crass, angry, sad, depressing, and dysfunctional... A show about four people who act pathetically, are callous and crude, selfish and self-centered, and can easily be described as addicts. Read as posted.
Can you describe as addicts?
Yeah, I thought I had it until that point.
Yeah, now it could be, let's have a hint.
All right, your positive review for the same show. This is a thinker's comedy series in that the jokes come so fast you really have to pay attention. But the reward is gut-busting laughs. The characters are very well defined, as well as the group dynamic, the gang, so you are immediately sucked in.
Okay.
The gang. I think this, I don't know why I'm guessing this, but I'm going to say it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
You are correct.
Yeah.
We're
one point. All right, Tara, now it's your turn.
Okay.
Nothing more than a story of a bunch of immature nymphos who allow men to control every aspect of their lives. Oh, boy. Every female protagonist is weak, desperate, and embarrassing in this show. On the bright side, it made me realize the type of person I don't want to be when I'm in my older years.
Oh.
Says this balanced and...
Call the midwife. Just kidding. That's not my answer. Is it Sex and the City?
That is good for 2 points.
Older years? Dang.
Wow.
That's seriously, it was like, wait, is it Golden Girls?
Yeah. All right. To Joe. Watching this show is like watching a not funny version of Seinfeld.
Oh, dear.
In which you see Newman having sex every episode. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Good for Wayne Knight.
A not funny version of Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Right. Where you watch Newman having sex in every episode.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom. I'm going to need the positive review.
All right. At first, I found the show disturbing because of all the random nudity, but now I know the director was making a point. A point that we have no problem looking at beautiful bodies nude, but the second someone with a not standard Hollywood body is nude, it becomes uncomfortable.
Boy, am I missing out on the shows about naked ugly people?
I don't think you are.
No.
I think you watch this show, if it's what I'm thinking of.
Ah. Wait.
The Wayne Knight story.
If this is girls, I'm going to be very upset.
Oh my
is it
God.
Girls? That is unacceptable.
Wow. I'm just the messenger. All right, back to Monty. Here's another short clue. Just showing how smart is KGB and how stupid is FBI. Communist propaganda.
The Americans?
Just showing how smart is KGB. And how stupid is FBI?
Morris Badenoff write this review.
Oh boy! All right, that was good for 2 points. To Sarah, the idea that ex-wives are super sexy and desirable begs for a self-inflicted mercy shot to the head. Come on, the idea that Khan's turning to God but then can't find him and turning back to crime begs for a self-inflicted slash wrist. Jeez, the idea. That a by-the-book marshal suddenly will commit any crime in the name of an ex-wife begs for a do-it-yourself sheet noose around the neck.
Oh my God!
Was that last one self-inflicted?
Yes, do it yourself.
This review mentioned poisoning also?
Are we going to report this guy?
Really? Justified.
You are correct. All right, for Tara.
Yep.
This is your last round one question. For a show whose lead character states he wants to elevate the conversation, his actions don't line up with his words. The character constantly makes sweeping claims without support, without sources, without any of the journalistic integrity he preaches. Now, first of all, before you answer, I'm going to say you're going to take exception with this being in the round one column, but with that in mind, what is your answer?
It's the newsroom.
It's the newsroom for 2 points. All right.
And before you proceed, there's some streaming service, like some Hulu-ish service here in Canada called Crave TV that's now advertising, we've got the newsroom. Watch every episode. Canada, no, don't do it. Like, I've been literally sent back in time to stop Canada from watching this show.
But is it that newsroom or is it the...
Yeah.
It's not the Canadian newsroom.
No, it's not the Canadian version.
All right. All right, so this is our last question for round one to Joe.
Yes.
People believe Family Guy copied this show. That's looking at it too superficially. They are satirizing The Simpsons. They are lampooning how formulaic it has become. I don't love Family Guy either, but this show has been complete trash for 10 years on. Enjoy your spoon-fed humor masses.
Wait, sorry. I'm going to need to hear it one more time because I was thinking... It was The Simpsons. One more time.
All right. People believe Family Guy copied the show. That's looking at it too superficially. They are satirizing The Simpsons. They are lampooning how formulaic it has become. I don't love Family Guy either, but this show has been complete trash for 10 years now. Enjoy your spoon-fed humor, masses.
What the hell?
Stupid masses.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going.
Follow your heart.
No, I'm trying to like follow the sentence diagram of that. Give me the other review, I guess.
Generally, people like belches and fart jokes better than they like witty commentary and the social condition of the middle class. But every now and then, something comes along that has both. Thus, I give you this show.
I have absolutely no idea.
Take a guess.
American Dad.
In fact, was The Simpsons.
Wait, you said The Simpsons.
I know it was in there. I'm sorry, trick question, I guess.
Wow. Okay.
that seems weird.
It's Jesus. Evil. I'm sorry. I guess it was. Hey, look, it wasn't. Okay. All right.
Scoring news. It is still very close. Joe has 7. I have 8. Monty has 9, and Tara is in the lead with 10.
All right, round 2. Bad shows, good reviews. To Monty. This TV show is fun. It shows a family that is supportive of one another. You can tell the love they have for each other. They seem to be a very fun family. So fun. It is a good TV show with lots of good laughs. Oh my God. I'm not reading that again.
In conclusion, this show is a land of contrasts. No. So all we know about it is that it is a family that's fun and loves each other.
Yeah.
I will need a clue.
Hilariously.
All right, the bad review. So what is this show about? Just a bunch of lazy, rich, spoiled women who are famous for nothing of value. I could only watch about 50 minutes of this before I wanted to hurt myself. It truly depresses me how popular this show is and how many stupid people enjoy the antics of a trio of women who do absolutely nothing to benefit society or the world.
I've come to the conclusion that this is Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
You get 1 point. Oh my. Picky, picky, picky. All right, for Sarah D. Bunting. Imagine, if you would, Hill Street Blues meets Fame. Through a piece of the shield and add a dash of Moulin Rouge, as well as the Tony winning The Life, and that pretty much sums it up.
No, no it doesn't. That is Cop Rock.
Here's the other review. I find it hard to believe that there are human beings alive that watched the show and didn't have to spend an hour in the shower to remove the stink. Tatara.
Yep.
We are fans of this ill-mannered family. They might be rednecks, but the house is full of love and curse words and farting, burping. LOL! Exclamation point. I would love to meet them all.
I'll take the hint.
This show makes me sick to my core. Main character is just a spoiled little monster. The family shows Americans at its worst. Then you have Mama, who appears to have the IQ of a tick. That without a K. You know, the kind found on dogs, D-O-G apostrophe S.
Is this Here Comes Honey Boo Boo?
It is Here Comes Honey Boo Boo for okay. 1 point. To Joe. Yes. Instead of watching today's clueless sitcoms and reality shows, I rear my little ones on straightforward comedies with situations that make you laugh and learn. The blank family are believable. They could be your family or the family next door.
Straightforward comedy, The Blank Family. Yeah. I'll need the other one.
I watched the series off and on, hoping that Urkel would learn not to damage others' properties, but it never happened.
Family Matters.
What a weird thing to watch the series for. Well, I hope it doesn't break anything this week. All right, Monty.
Yeah.
Yes, all the pressure is put on 1 8-year-old girl while the rest dance aimlessly in circle, but I'll be damned if it doesn't make addictive television.
Dance Moms?
Dance Moms. 2 points. All right, Sarah D. Bunting. I don't know why the show was canceled or why some people don't understand the difference between movie and sitcom. The writers also deserve some credit because they really did capture the spirit of being Greek and presented Greek life as it really is.
Wow, that was a show. My Big Fat Greek Wedding show.
Close. My Big Fat Greek Life was a TV show.
All right,
Tara Ariana. The comedy about an Indian call center for an American novelties company could be the biggest underdog story of the season outside of Dylan, Texas. Blank.
Out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Outsourced.
Forged ahead to grow into one of TV's most charming series. That is worth 2 points. All right, for Joe.
Yes.
For the first few minutes, the main actor, I've never heard of this guy before, apparently he's a comedian, tried in vain to be funny. They just made a really unfunny, pretty pathetic sitcom that strained for profane humor and blue-collar yucks. Now HBO can make room for a much better series like season 2 of Extras.
Is this a good review of a bad show?
Can I hear it one more time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the hints were flipped around on this one. I didn't notice. So you're getting a bad review of a bad show, Joe.
Oh, I see.
Okay. For the first few minutes, the main actor, I've never heard of this guy before. Apparently, he's a comedian. Tried in vain to be funny. They just made a really unfunny, pretty pathetic sitcom that strained for profane humor and blue-collar yucks. Now HBO can make room for a much better series like season 2 of Extras.
Is this Lucky Louie?
It is Lucky Louie. Nice.
All right.
All right. Everybody's got one question left. Let's get the scores.
So Joe has 9. I have 10. Monty has 12. Tara has 13.
All right. So I'm going to make an executive decision here, which is
to give
this.
Joe those points?
Giving Joe those 2 points, because he would have got it if that was redacted. Without
for sure.
question.
Yeah.
So
I was going to make that protest.
What is Joe's total now? With 2 points out.
11.
Two additional points?
Yes.
11.
11. Okay. So everybody's last question coming up, starting with Monty. I used to work in the biz, sitcom production. So I didn't want to watch this show because I thought it would just be another inside Hollywood show developed by people who are enamored by what they do. I was wrong, and now I'm addicted to this show.
Please, please, please let this be Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
You are correct.
Wow. So happy.
Sarah, no one has ever been that happy about Studio 60.
Except you.
All right. The bad review says, it simply isn't funny. For Sarah D. Bunting, I didn't think they could find enough events to keep me interested. Since it was all taking place in such a small space, it was interesting, though, and kept me at the edge of my seat, wondering what was going to happen next.
Space? I need the other hint.
The only reason I suffered through the poor acting and repetitiveness of this miniseries was that I thought it was a miniseries and told myself that I could make it to the end. There is no way that I'll be watching season 2, because if I knew there's a possibility that there would be a season 2, I would have stopped watching season 1 a long time ago.
A small space.
Uh-huh.
I don't...
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, God.
Joe, do you know it?
Small space!
I super know it!
Oh, no.
Firefly?
Oh.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now Domer.
Domer.
That was under the dome. Oh, that was a heartbreaker. Yeah, I thought you would have had it for sure.
Oh my God, Sarah, okay. I'm so sorry.
Tara Ariana. Watching this sitcom, I could not help but feel that I was being visited by the ghost of Norman Lear. The issue... Wait, is he dead?
No, he's alive.
Yeah. I think he's alive.
The issue...
He was just an ATX, I think.
Yeah. The issue, in quotes, writing and the character development are that well tuned on current issues without losing loosing the comedy.
Sure.
It is definitely something which everybody, and not just girls, are going to like watching.
Two Broke Girls?
Yeah, correct. For 2 points.
Wow, nice.
Wow. All right, last question of the game for Joe Reed. I like that this show is totally what I would do. If I were rich and spoiled like them, they sort of do the things that we cannot, and that's what makes the show so entertaining. I think they got fired from almost every job on the show. However, that is the beauty of it.
Man.
Was it called The Simple Life?
It was called The Simple Life.
Wow, nice pull.
That was the last question. Thanks. So, Sarah D. Bunting, let's hear those scores.
Tara is our winner with 15. Monty right behind her with 14. Joe, great comeback with 13. And I have 10.
All right.
Guys,
do you want to do this shits and giggles?
Handshake to
hot
Monty
potato?
And Joe and everyone.
Hello? Shits and giggles,
hot
potato?
Yeah, let's do a hot potato.
All right, the twist here is that it is Hot Potato Top 100 shows, but it is Top 100 user-rated shows, and I believe IMDb. So might not jive with the general critical consensus. Let's go, Monty, first.
Battlestar Galactica.
This is top 100 user rated shows.
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
Sopranos.
Mad Men.
Long list. There's a lot of scrolling.
Yeah.
You're out.
Wow. That's fine.
Wow. Big Bang Theory.
Joe's using his head.
What?
Oh, that's amazing.
Firefly.
Wow. We need a game system. Well,
yeah,
that's
what I'm doing.
I'm sorry. What did he say?
Firefly.
Firefly.
He said Firefly.
Okay. Star Trek: The Original Series.
Gang. And our winner is Monty.
Wow. The inconsistent nerds.
Oh my god.
And that was the top 100, so value guest just got 100 Dave points.
Whoa. Oh shit. Good job, value guest.
Tara. Congratulations, Tara.
Tara.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We served sentences about the fourth season of Orange is the New Black, served up a birthday greeting for Megan, and then went around the dial with stops at The Girlfriend Experience, Skin Wars Fresh Paint, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, OJ Made in America, and Orphan Black. There is some other stuff too, but remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana.
You should wear your hair up, girlfriend.
Sarah D. Bunting.
That's just murder math.
Joe Reed.
Aw, Topsy.
And Monty Ashley.
I was going to say the murder math one.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Oh, got a little caught up in the moment.
We're in love! Really happening, finally! Thank you, God!
Gotta go.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.